Hello and welcome to the Pals Anime Lounge, a podcast where a bunch of pals get together to talk about anime. The pals are Artura.
Hello everyone.
And Gozgoz.
Hello.
I am your host, Ace. In today's episode, we're talking about That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime. Because as of this recording, the game That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime Isekai Chronicles is about to come out. So we're hitting on that SEO goodness. It was animated by 8-Bit. Technically still is, because the third season's airing, or just aired. The studio behind Infinite Stratos and Sinduality Noir, which we watched three episodes of for this podcast. That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime has a My Animalist score of 8.14. My synopsis is, after being fatally stabbed, an office worker is sent to another world to live as a slime monster. Artura, what do you have?
Its title is pretty much self-explanatory. Okay, I read another one as well, just in case. But I figured, you know,
bare minimum of effort.
After being stabbed in present-day Tokyo, our protagonist reincarnates. And you know the rest.
And Gozgo?
ChatGPT takes a man's dying thoughts as a prompt, and due to AI hallucinations, interprets, "I want to sleep with women" as "I want to be a slime."
Well, yeah, he wants to sleep around, so it says, okay, you now have the ability Predator.
Accurate.
But we'll get to that. The first episode opens, as most anime set in fantasy worlds, on World War II.
Yes.
A child is war-crimed in a Japanese town, which is being bombed by aircraft, and we cut to present-day Tokyo.
World War II is never mentioned again in the first three episodes.
I was going to say, feel free to ignore World War II from now on. Satoru is walking around thinking how good life is and how he's asexual and aromantic. He meets two co-workers and they invite him to dinner when he's stabbed by a guy running around with a knife.
Okay, you skipped a part where the guy running around with a knife was probably not aiming for him. Do not let his dying act as a hero go to waste.
My apologies.
I want to point out that he was running for a while. Like
you know what? That's a really good point.
Like, did he just leave his house that day and just started running with a knife pointed forward?
It makes me think of those video YouTube memes where they like play the same three scenes forever until eventually you're like, oh, this is in loop.
That's why he ran away when he stabbed Satoru, because he's like, oh, I didn't actually want to stab anyone. I was just running forwards.
Did he run back with the knife in the same pose to see if it happens again?
Yeah, like, if he was aiming to kill someone, he wouldn't just start running from, like, that far away when there's, like, a crowd of people. Like, you would be bound to hit someone else.
Have you seen Monty Python and the Holy Grail?
I did.
Yeah, there's a scene where one of the knights starts running towards a castle. Ah! And the guards at the gate, they're like, what's happening over there? Cut to still running. Oh, I think, is someone coming over here? And cut to him still running.
Yeah, he runs, they cut back to him, then he's suddenly further away than he previously was. Eventually he just pops up right next to them and stabs them.
Yeah. Yeah, had airs of that. Anyway, as Satoru's dying, he thinks about how hot it feels, how much it hurts, and how cold he feels. And then he asks his co-worker to fry his hard drive before deciding that in the next life he's going to be a huge pervert because he's a virgin at almost 40.
And then you, once more he asks, but make sure to fry that hard drive, okay?
Yeah, he brings it up a couple of times.
The hard drive appears more often than World War II's opening scene.
Meanwhile, each thing he thinks or says gets a flash from an electronic voice assigning skills such as heat resistance, pain resistance, and the unique skill Predator. But not a skill to wipe hard drives.
No, it was like, fuck that. I can't do everything for you. What am I, ChatGPT?
Anyway, Satoru falls through a void before realizing that he can't feel his hands or feet or open his eyes, but he can feel. Which is strange because he can't feel pain later. He feels a plant dissolve inside his body and wonders if humans can dissolve plants. Yes, it's part of the function of eating.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Dude's never had a salad.
Yeah, he was like, what the fuck? What am I, a rabbit? I never ate a plant in my life. Except for rice.
All in all, he's super chill about being reincarnated as a slime. He winds up actually talking to the electronic voice through one of his abilities, which explains what he can do. So he spends time making potions and storing them inside his body, and then starts gobbling magical crystals. And out of nowhere, he just falls into some deep water and is stuck until he Kirby's some water and turns into a jet ski engine. He launches out of the water and collides with a force field and learns that he cannot feel pain, but he can still sustain damage. This doesn't come up again in the three episodes. A shadowy voice speaks to him and promises to give Satoru sight if Satoru promises to not fear them and visit occasionally because they're sealed in a cave. Thing is, the shadow doesn't actually give him sight. It just tells him how to see magicules, the particles of the force in this world.
Midichlorians.
Yeah, midichlorians. When Satoru can see, he sees that the shadow is a dragon who introduces themselves as a Veldora. They chat, and Veldora says it's unusual for people to be reincarnated in this world, as otherworlders usually just travel there.
Yeah, dude. You didn't have to die. Idiot.
Satoru decides to try and find otherworlders, to try and find someone else from Japan. And then he asks Veldora why they were sealed in a cave. And it's because they went a little Godzilla 300 years ago, and someone calling themselves a summon defeated him.
Very confusing.
I mean, it's kind of like the thing that happens in Grand Fate, no? Which I've always liked that type of fighting where a wizard has to like summon a thing or something to fight for them. I thought it's really cool. It's like real life creature collecting.
We just don't have enough context to understand what it means here.
The episode ends with Satoru asking Veldora to be his friend and then wonders if his co-worker wiped his hard drive. So we cut to the co-worker dropping the PC and monitor into a bath of water.
You fucking idiot. Keep the monitor. Also, what's that monitor from, like, 1995?
I don't know when the light novel was written, so this might be set in 1995.
Oh yeah, I guess they didn't show smartphones. Only a knife. Did they have knives back then?
I believe they did.
Mm.
The end credits I thought pretty good. It turns out the end credits are the opening credits, because we see them immediately upon starting the next episode. But yeah, it's a pretty good title sequence, I think.
I really like the effort he put into the singing. Like, I know it's stupid to say, but it feels like there's so much effort in this opening / ending credits that I was like, yeah, I like it. He's giving it his all.
Yes, I agree. We pick up immediately where we left off with Satoru asking Veldora how to free him from his imprisonment. Sorry, how to free them. I do not know if Veldora has a gender. After some back and forth, Satoru offers to eat Veldora to get them out. And turns out Veldora is super into Vore.
Well, it's not exactly how it happens, but yes, he's super into Vore. I mean, they're super into Vore.
Before that happens, Veldora asks Satoru to swap names to seal their pact as friends and equals. So Veldora becomes Veldora Tempest, and Satoru becomes Rimuru Tempest. So I won't be using the name Satoru anymore. Veldora is eaten, and we get some exposition about the wider world. And this actually made me wonder about all these light novels, mangas, animes set in another world with a being from our world reincarnated over there. And it's always a fantasy world, and there's always political intrigue. And did you just want to write about some fantasy political intrigue, but you thought no one's going to buy this, so I'd best put in someone from 2005 in it as well?
My assumption is because of the way in writing you have to do kind of like introduce the player, or sorry, I'm thinking about games, introduce the audience into your world through the protagonist, right? So usually the protagonist can't know much about the world, but if you live in a medieval world that is in political upheaval and then you don't know about it, it's like, why are you an idiot? So then if you bring someone from the modern age, they're relatable and it makes sense that they don't understand anything because, well, they don't. So then that way you can understand with them while still having that connection of we both come from like a modern time.
Counterpoint, they have amnesia.
I have nothing to say to that.
Oh, don't you know? No, I have amnesia. Oh, well, let me explain.
It's a good one. It's, you know, it's a possibility. We'll add that to the list of tropes we're going to keep using forever. It's going to get discovered after people watch this podcast, and they're going to be like, yes, let's do that. And that's going to become the new thing.
Back in the cave, away from the exposition, because that never comes back into the three episodes, Rimuru gains abilities while waiting for Veldora to be analyzed by his Predator ability. As luck would have it, Predator allows him to scan multiple things at once, so while it's scanning Veldora, he eats a bunch of monsters and gets their abilities through the scanning, including now being able to speak thanks to sonar from a bat.
Which really makes you wonder, is Veldora even really alive anymore? We haven't heard them talk. We don't know if you can eat, really like consume things without eating them, because that was the first time the protagonist ate any living thing. So it's like, you know.
He does have loads of potions in his like slime pocket or something. And I believe Veldora is in the slime pocket.
Okay, that's a fair point. Okay. Thank you for that.
Weeks pass and he finds the door to leave the cave, just in time for some adventurers to open it. He manages to avoid them and leaves the cave and runs into some goblins. The goblins think that he's a very strong monster and take him back to their village, because apparently their god disappeared a month ago. Monsters in the area have become more aggressive. If you have media literacy, yes, the fact that he ate the dragon means that the monsters, like, he's caused this. The goblins ask to be protected from 100 dire wolves in exchange for their loyalty, and then the wolves attack, and the episode ends. The third episode starts with a recap of all the information from the past two episodes. It takes about 30 seconds. We pick up after the second episode, and the wolves aren't attacking. That bit confused me. Instead, Rimuru goes to the medical tent and commits war crimes. I'd have looked it up, but I didn't. I'm pretty sure that eating wounded warriors is a war crime.
Yeah, I'm loving the way you're describing this anime.
I mean, it's a different world. They don't have
the Geneva Convention.
Yes, that's. I was going to say that. Yes.
While the wounded are inside Rimuru, he hits them with some of his amassed healing potions. Like, that's how he doesn't say he gives them, he says he basically hits them with.
Off screen, he fills in a syringe, sticks them.
And they come out healthy. Later, we cut to the direwolves in the forest, with the leader explaining the plan. The plan is to wipe out the goblins so they can take over the whole forest. The direwolves attack and are defeated pretty quickly. Fearing that the surviving wolves won't turn tail, Rimuru eats the corpse of the leader and turns into a direwolf. The survivors bow to Rimuru. That's the scene. The next day, Rimuru pronounces that the goblins and the direwolves will live together in peace. And since they're all nameless monsters, Rimuru decides to name them all.
Yeah, everyone gets a name.
Real Oprah moment. You get a name and you get a name. This uses up his magicule energy, however, and he falls asleep for 3 days. When he wakes, he's greeted by a female goblin with big breasts, which he doesn't recall seeing before. He fetches the village elder, who explains that he's super buff now because getting a name ranked him up, and also the other goblins. Also, the direwolves evolved because he named one of them.
And he's just like, fuck it, I'm not gonna give a name to every single one of you anymore. You're gonna have to figure this shit out yourselves. Smell each other's asses.
Rimuru declares that there are 3 rules. Don't attack humans, don't fight amongst yourselves, and don't belittle other races. He then assigns teams to gather food and craft shelter and create clothing. The last 2 don't go very well. So Rimuru ventures to see some nearby dwarfs for some help with that, and the episode ends. So, since it's not an adaptation, the game recording isn't out, and when people listen to this episode, it has just come out. So, has this made you check out the game when it comes out?
Oh, absolutely. I, 1,000,000%, I'm gonna try this game.
Maybe. I know a lot about the game.
It was available on Steam and consoles. A side-scrolling action RPG with city building.
Yeah, it looks weird. You know, I wish we could play a slime that eats everything. Like, that would be hilarious in an open world setting. But it still looks great, and I really like side-scrollers, so.
Yeah, also, as the trailer says, exciting city building.
Oh, if it's exciting, then yeah.
See? Exciting city building.
Though half of me wishes that the game was the time I got reincarnated as Yamcha.
So Dying Simulator?
No, that's...
Mine doesn't have that. What? Where's the trailer? Sorry, Gors, go on.
What do you mean? What trailer doesn't have that? What?
My Steam page doesn't have the trailer.
The end?
No.
It's at the very beginning for me.
I am being robbed.
That's so weird. Just make sure if you go to Steam to buy this, don't accidentally buy That Time I Got Reincarnated as an Orc or That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Succubus. Those are not related to this anime.
Okay, but tell me more about the second one.
Okay, they're actually both like 18 plus games, so...
Understandable.
I kind of saw that coming.
But yes, I think I'd like to check out the game. It's £45, so probably on sale.
Yeah, that's my only quarrel with it, is that it looks fun, but I don't know that I'd say for me it's 155,000, so it's it's a bit much, especially because the game looks really indie, which. I love it, but it looks like one of those games that you play once in a blue moon, and then if you abandon it once, you never come back to play it.
The developer is Zoc Co. Limited, which has also created Nothing. This is their first game.
Okay. I mean, it looks good. I feel like we've kind of strayed away from the side-scrolling action RPGs, which can be really fun. But I think as the video game industry grows and we make titles bigger, we kind of leave these things behind. I was speaking to my wife about this once. Collectathon used to be like its own genre, and then it just became like a subgenre for platformers. And that's kind of like the indicator of content bloat in the industry as a whole. I miss when we had just casual action RPG titles with, you know, that are probably level based or not, like open world ones, like, well, I guess open world esque, like Ori and the Blind Forest. I like these types of games. I want to see more of them. Games don't necessarily only have to get bigger, but at this price point, it's like, okay, that's taking it a bit far.
Anyway, based on the first three episodes, is this a Yata, a Nani, or a Baka, Arturo?
I think for me, it's definitely a Yata. Probably one of the most confidence I've given, because it just made me laugh a lot. I honestly had no idea what was going to happen at any given point, and it was just great. I can't wait to watch more.
And girls?
Yeah, I think it was a Yata. It was promising.
Yeah, Yata from me as well. Like you said, Arturo, you just didn't know what was going to happen. Like, right towards the end of the third episode, he's making a comment about clothes while a female orc, goblin,
thinking about the time we got reincarnated as a transcendent orc, huh?
No, it's they evolved from goblins to hobgoblins, don't they? So there was a female hobgoblin there just bouncing for no reason to help illustrate how little clothing these goblins wear. That's not something that the anime had not made a big thing about sexualizing women up to that point.
Yeah, no, and honestly, at every point I was like, oh god, when is he going to eat a goblin, and what is he going to get from it?
And then he goes and commits a war crime.
Several.
So, will you keep watching?
Yes, there's no doubt in my mind about this one. I already told my wife about it. It's really funny. I love the slime. I love slimes. So, like, I love the protagonist so much just because he's a slime.
And goes?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Well, you can watch it on Netflix in some regions and Crunchyroll.
I do remember it seeing it on Netflix, yes.
It is not currently on Netflix in the UK.
Oh.
I did check.
Well, then, fuck that. I'm not watching it. No, I might. I might.
I'm probably... I'm either going to play the game because it follows the story and expands on it with new chapters and stuff, or, you know, watch the show.
Is the upcoming game supposed to cover the anime, or is it just a new story?
The description says relive the original story from the encounter with Kijin to the battle against the Kingdom of Falmouth, fully voiced. So it sounds like it starts either partway or a lot of the way, depending on if it's in season, it takes place in season 2 or season 3. I was just seeing if the DLC mentions like adding any new stuff, but it's probably stuff after the end of the game. So yeah, I'd probably have to watch rather than just start playing, otherwise I'll probably be lost. Yeah, it's a fun time.
I mean, I don't even know the protagonist.
That's something that I forgot to bring up. The narrator is the slime, but you don't know when he's narrating and when he's thinking. Because at one point he says, and that's how I became the savior of the goblin village. It's like, but who are you talking to?
He even acknowledges it at the beginning of the thing. He's narrating. He's like, wait a minute, who am I talking to?
He had forgotten that. But anyway, that brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you for joining me, Arturo and Gus.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to the Pals Anime Lounge. And better yet, thank you for subscribing wherever you found this episode. You can find more from us on GameGrim.com, finding us on social media, or listening to the Greencast podcast. Until next time, game on.